Good to see you. I feel I'm getting groupies. This is kind of fun. Yeah. I'm a rock star. No one's ever followed me to a new place before. This is like the first. Usually I have to drag my friends with me from Asheville and go, come on with me. But this has been a difficult topic. I've been working on it for a couple of talks now, and it started out as causes and conditions, you know, that which we believe unfolds. I'm getting a lot of feedback. Is there, at least I can hear it. It sounds okay to you, so I just need to ignore that. So, but what I've come to believe in the end, it really comes down to our perception. And perception varies for everyone. Everyone has an individual perception of everything, from the color of this beautiful carpet to the white or the off-white or the color of these flowers, right? We all have our own specific perception. And that specific perception comes from how we were raised, primarily. So this is the professor in me, and people who know me know that there's always a little bit of a communications lecture in this, because we're taught how to perceive. We're taught how to speak. We get our accents from our parents and from our older siblings and from our cousins, those who are closest to us as we're being raised, and then we move out into our you know, elementary schools. In my age, we didn't have preschool. We had kindergarten, and you just threw into kindergarten, and then we started our process of acculturation, and then we started learning different things. But in stress, we invariably return to our basic enculturation from our birth. And I'm going to just move this chair so I can walk around from our birth. So what that means is that words that we were raised with get charged. And so a lot of swear words for certain family members are very charged words. For others, it's words that might denote race, right? Or religions, right? Because if you were raised Lutheran like I was, then Catholicism really wasn't something that was accepted. And we didn't really even know about non-denominational centers like Unity or Science of Mind or any of those. And so those are all acculturated patterns that we've learned. So first we hear a sound, and then we remember it. We remember it, and we go, oh, that's a siren, or that's a dog barking. But then we recognize it in the context of our life, and then we go, that's my dog barking, or that's not my dog barking. Or that sounds like, you know, a car door slam, but not a muffler going off. Or that is not a gunshot, that's a muffler, right? Or that's a door slam. And we know these sounds because we're raised with them. So really, if we think about it, we know the difference between a police siren, a fire engine, and an ambulance. If we think about it, and we know exactly what to do in there. So what happens is that we evaluate the sounds, and then we respond. And so that happens with every word. It happens as you're listening to me now. Not only have you perceived who I am by how I dress and how I wear my hair, maybe the color of my glasses or whatever, or that I'm wearing hiking boots because when I leave here I'm going hiking in Silva with Barbara Jeffries, that I know you all know Barbara. And so, but those things all lead to our perception, and all of those perceptions start with our enculturation. And so we carry those with us through this education, through this political life that we live as Americans. We cannot separate ourselves from the politics of our nation. It's fairly impossible. Even if say, I don't listen to the news, because it stresses me out, because I just want to know peace. I want to know love and harmony and joy. And so you practice that, but then something filters in. Someone comes up to you at a restaurant that you know, and they go, oh my, did you hear about the 17 kids in Florida? And you say, no, because I don't listen to the news. But it comes back to you anyway. Right? We hear these bits and pieces, but then we hear these bits and pieces through this perception of this filter of our acculturated and our inculturated listening skills. And that's important because those charged words direct us to how we choose to live our lives. And so when people say to me, I don't listen to the news, I just want peace and harmony, so I'm going to pray for peace and harmony and I'm going to live my life to the best I can, which is a good thing. We absolutely need people being the best people they can be. But I believe, and this is part of this perception today, my perception has changed. My perception is all acculturated, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Because if I was still working out of my inculturated patterns of behavior, I'd still be a homeless, immature teenager living in Bemidji, Minnesota, in a very racist town with very dysfunctional family members. And thankfully, I found my way out of that. Right? This October, I'm going to have 40 years of being clean and sober, and it's a blessing. And I look back on that and I think, how did that happen? How did I get to be 61? And I think, I don't know. Sometimes I honestly don't know, because when I was 50, and all of this sounds like a big kind of random story, but it's all going to come back around. It's all right here. When I was 50, my niece, this is how I ended up in North Carolina, partially. My niece said, come out and visit for your 50th birthday, and we'll do a whole bunch of stuff. North Carolina is amazing. She lives in Weaverville. She says, we'll go kayaking and we'll go rafting and we're going to go skydiving. And I was like, kayaking, rafting, skydiving, no, like that. And she was like, yes, skydiving. Because I've raised her pretty much. And she's like this. And I'm really not, right? I'm really not. I like adrenaline. I ride a motorcycle. I like wild rivers and all of that. And so, but she took me down to Greenville to skydive Carolina. And the whole time I was like, no, no, no. She was like, well, if you really don't want to go, just watch. And I was like, okay. So we get there and they herd you right away. This group of people are milling around. Has anybody in here skydive? Yes, so you know what I'm saying. So everyone's kind of milling around, and then they usher you into this little room where it's really tight, and they have a screen up, and it's the release of information, and they run through it really quick, and right away you have to sign your life away. And you say, I will not hold you responsible if I die or injured, but dying is at the forefront in my mind. I didn't hear injury, I just heard die. And so I'm like, okay, can't get worse than this. So I signed it away. And then they herd everyone out into a big warehouse. And you walk into the warehouse and they're loading, people are loading your chute and stuff. And you meet the actual person who's folding your parachute. And to me, they all looked like hippies. And I thought they were all out back of the warehouse doing this. You know, oh, this is so cool. I don't know, skydiving like that. Like that. And then they come in and fold your chute. But they look like that, but I don't think they were. I think that they're very responsible adults. I met the young gentleman folding my chute. And then I met my tandem partner, who's a tall man, much, much bigger than me, big scruffy beard. And every time he hit me, he would go, it's going to be okay. But he was really big and didn't really kind of realize that every time he tapped me on the back or something, I would do this. And so I met him, and every time you look at anyone, they do this. It's going to be awesome. This is great. Like, good for you, right? And so I go through it, and then we watch a video about how you land. You lift your knees up or slide in on your butts, because you don't, your leg will buckle under you, and so you want to make sure your knees are up. It's much like kayaking. If you fall out of the raft or the kayak, lift your knees up, and so you float in the river. Anyway, so that's a tangent. That was a tangent. Anyway, so we did all of that. We get in the gear, and he's like hitting me. It's going to be great. it's going to be great, because I think I looked like I was about ready to have a heart attack. And so we're all standing outside in the line, and the plane comes down, and then you get in this plane. Everyone files in, and there are two seats, there are two benches in the plane, like this, and you sit on the bench like this, right? And so my niece is up over on this bench, and I'm over here on this one, and every time you look at anyone, and my heart is just, and I don't have any air, I'm like, I can't breathe, and anytime you look at anyone, they like, and I'm like, yeah. And so he's talking to me, George, I think his name was George, anyway, and I can feel the plane takes off, and he's talking to me. He said, we're going to get up to about 15,000 feet. And I can feel him starting to harness me in, where he's connecting our harnesses and all of that. And he goes, and then we're going to get up to about 15,000 feet, and then the door is going to open, and then these people over here are going to go, and then we're going to go, and then we're going to free fall, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. And then he pulls these straps, and I go flying back, and I'm sitting in his lap, and my feet are dangling. And I have not sat in a guy's lap in a very, very long time. And so I'm sitting there, and I say, put me down. So he loosens them, and I'm back and sitting on the bench again. And he goes, and then the door opens, and these people are going. And then he says in my ear, he goes, scoot. And I'm like, scoot? Like, what do you mean? And he goes, boom. And we go, boom, boom, and we're hopping down the bench. And right? Oh, my. Okay, so brave woman. So I go, and he says to me, he goes, okay, when you're ready to go, just do this. You know, and he did it with his right hand, and I didn't have any air in my lungs. And so I thought, I raised my left hand open without the thumb and say, I need a minute. I take a breath. And I raised my left hand, and he goes, one, two, and we somersaulted out. And I didn't have any air in my lungs. And then you free fall for a couple of 100 feet, like that. And I had no air in my lungs. And what he said to me while I was doing that free fall, which only lasts like 6-7 seconds, really, blink of the eye, he says, open your eyes. And I kind of, because we had, you know, goggles on, and I opened my eyes, and it was this amazing thing. And then he says, pull the chute. And I pulled the chute, and it feels like you shoot up in the air a couple 100 feet, but you really don't. Honestly, you just stop falling, right? And there is absolutely no sound. There is no sound. And at that point, about 11,000 feet, you can actually begin to see the curvature of the earth. And there is no sound. And I know at that moment, as I was just kind of floating there, I was touched by the divine. I know that I touched that moment where nothing else mattered, nothing. And it changed my life. And it was at that moment, when I was 50, you know, that I decided I was going to go on and become a minister. And 10 years later, that I achieved my goal. But I'll never forget that moment, because that moment is a point of perception. And that's what we're talking about today. Because anytime anyone said, hey, let's go jump out of an airplane, I'd be like, I'm not jumping out of an airplane. It's hard to get me on an airplane anyway. I'm a car or a train person or a motor. I like to be on the ground. But now I'm a skydiver. And but it, because of that moment of acculturation. And that happens for everything that we do. We try new foods. It goes directly to our perception. We look at a color of a food and say, I don't think I'm going to eat that. And but then we try it, and something in us changes. Maybe it reinforces us, our opinion, but maybe it opens something up. But the goal is to try new things and to open up. That's what I believe. So if we stay stuck in our enculturated patterns of behavior that we were raised with, then we continue to recycle those beliefs. So if the word activist is a word that you conjures up some wild-looking feminist who's just angry going, wah, 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 instead of a person who is stepping forward in faith, knowing calm and peace and knowing love in the world, then we have these contrasting perceptions, right? So when I first went to the Women's March last January, a year ago, the first one in D.C., and my minister at the time said, I just couldn't do that because all of those people are so angry, and I just don't want to focus on the anger. And I was there, and I know there was no anger. There were a few people around the edges going, wah, wah, wah. You know, there's always one or two in every group that's wah, wah, wah. But the majority of people were in peace and harmony and they and love. It was the most amazing thing I had ever been in. 500,000 people, you literally could not move. And the way we moved was we had, everyone had their hands on the person's back in front of them, and we shuffled like this for 6 hours. And it was the most amazing thing. No one was stressed. No one was angry. No one was upset. And it was amazing. It was amazing. And I feel like I saw the best of our country on that day. I saw the best of our country on another day, back when I was a radical. And I was an angry feminist. And the perception of this day to that day in the same city is astounding to me. When I was in Washington, D.C. with a bunch of friends, and I was younger, and I was a real angry radical. I hated the military. I hated the government. I hated anything that had any authority. I thought we could change everything through violence and anger and protest and signs and all of that. And they wanted to go to the mall and go to walk at the National Monument. And I was like, I don't want to go to the National Monument. A bunch of white men, bunch of, you know, blah, 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 like that. And then they were like, so then I'm following them along and I'm at the National Monuments. And they say, let's go over to the Vietnam War Memorial. And I'm like, I don't want to go to the Vietnam War Memorial. I just don't want to. I'm just not going to. But I tagged along. And it happened to be one of those days where it had rained the day before, and the sun was shining through, and there's several ways, many of us have been to that wall, and you can approach it in a couple of different ways. And we came up over a small hill just as the sun was shining and hitting that wall, and it was reflecting this gorgeous, this amazing kind of copperish color, and it was just reflecting out. And I looked down, and it was that iconic moment that we all have all seen in photographs. And I saw a Marine in full dress kneeling at the wall and touching a name, and he was crying. And I stood there for the longest time, and I just stood there, and it was like, that is another moment that changed my life. My perception of what that person stood for and what that wall stood for and those deaths and what they stood for, what that meant to me, changed everything. And I realized that those people in the military, they may not ever agree with me, but they fight for my right to have that belief. Right? And so again, it's that perception where my perception changed. And now, since then, like I serve with the National Vet Associations, I write grants for them. I realize that my job is to be of service. It's not to sit home and pray for peace. It's to be out there supporting the military who bring peace to me. And that I believe that wholeheartedly at this point. But again, it took years for that perception to change, but it took that step of kind of tagging along with my friends and trusting myself and the people that love me, that they're not going to lead me into something that's going to cause me harm. And I think that's, again, we have to go back to that point of perception, because I wasn't raised in any way except my parents did not expect me to go to college. I dropped out when I was 15 and moved to, kind of moved, I ran like this to Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I lived on the streets for the next couple of years. They didn't care, yet never entered their mind that I don't think. Maybe they thought about me once in a while. I didn't go back home for several years. Then I was an adult, and then I went back when I was clean and sober. But they weren't ever a part of that, and they were never supportive of that. My mom would always look at me, this was her point of reference, though, right? And say, why are you still in school? Why don't you just get a good job and settle down? Right? And so this is the point of that, why I bring my mom in, because her point of reference is just different. Through her inculturation, through her acculturation, than mine. My acculturated patterns brought me out of Bemidji, Minnesota, helped me get my doctorate, helped me get my ministerial degree, encouraged me to do this. This is what I want to do. I'm starting a retreat, a spiritual retreat business, and the first one is going to be in New Mexico. If anyone's interested, I'll have business cards for you. But it's a different way of looking at the same world that we live in. And so Ernest Holmes is very clear about what he says. And there is a quote that I want to read so that I get it correct. And you all know Ernest. He said, selective attention, where is that? Oh, he says, I can't imagine God not caring, because this is what people sometimes think. Even in science of mind, even in unity, even in general spiritual practices, we kind of blame the spirit or God for things that might happen. And again, that goes to a point of perception that I've talked about before. It's like either we're asking for something from God or we're asking to recognize the spirit of God in us. And this is where that point of perception keeps coming back. It comes back to you, right? God is not out there. God is in you. Edwin Gaines says, right, what do children of cats grow up to become? Cats. What do children of God grow up to become? God. And that we are manifestations of that light, individualized manifestations of that light. And together we create those forces that can literally change the world and change someone's life. And he says, I can't imagine God not caring. I can't either, but we're dealing with law. Does the law of electricity care whether it cooks the dinner or burns the house down? Whether it electrocutes a criminal or warms the feet of a saint? Of course, the law does not care at all. Does the urge which impels people to express care whether a man kneels in ecstasy or lies drunk in the gutter? We are dealing with law, and it follows that since we are dealing with law, it will ultimately bring us back to the forces which we set in motion through it. And that force that gets set in motion comes from our inculturated patterns of behavior and how we perceive each individual and each instance that we hear. So if we turn off the news and we don't listen to it, then we just hear Andy's perception of what happened, right, or Nancy's perception of what happened, then we're doing an injustice to ourselves to not fully experience it for ourselves, to read everything. Because if we only have partial awareness, then our focus cannot be clear. So in order to hold peace and harmony on some level, we have to know that there's genocide happening in the world. We have to know that young people are being shot. Whether you want gun control or don't, it doesn't change the fact that 17 people were shot a month ago in Parkland, right? The gun control law really has nothing to do with it. What has to do with it is, how do we feel about that incident without allowing politics to sway us from our spiritual goal and our spiritual path. To get caught up in these issues kind of lessens our personal impact. If you want to walk in the world in harmony, then walk in the world in harmony, but use your voice. Show up. Don't just kneel. Walk forward. And then stand in a crowd of people with love and harmony and peace. And know that, because we radiate out. You can feel it. How many of you have ever gone to a restaurant with a good friend and you're just happy and you're just at peace and you're content? The restaurant's empty, but people walk in and they sit right next to your booth, right? And you kind of go, the whole restaurant's over there. Leave us alone. They're drawn to us because of our energy, because we resonate peace, love, joy, harmony, and those are the attributes of God. And those attributes are what I'm encouraging here. I'm inviting you to invite those attributes in, but don't just stay here. Don't just stay in your meditation rooms, in your chapels, and in your bedrooms when you meditate. Take that with you. Take that out, because people on the streets need to see love and harmony walking down the road. Love is all there is, and the rest we make up, and so it is. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
You're welcome.